just, I don't know, you know the spot, 2 miles outside Bradworthy in North Devon. Even smaller than Staithe.
I'll dispute that.
Well, well, it's a competition. That's a format for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the BBC News on 5 Live, I'm Giuliano Cazaday. Lawyers representing more than 37 women who've accused the former Harrods owner Mohamed Al-Fayed of rape and sexual assault have said the luxury department store let them down. Mr. Al-Fayed is alleged to have set up a system where young women were recruited to work for him so he could assault them. Barristers say Harrods established and maintained this system. Speaking at a news conference in London, one of his alleged victims, Natasha, said at first Mr. Al-Fayed behaved like a father figure.
Unbeknownst to me, I had walked into a lion's den, a lair of cover-ups, deceit, lies, manipulation, humiliation, and gross sexual misconduct. Seeing his obituary just over a year ago triggered such a huge emotion, I couldn't believe that this monster had gotten away with his crimes.
Gloria Ullred, an American lawyer who's represented victims in numerous sexual assault cases, was part of the legal team at that news conference. She suggested Mr. Al-Fayed had betrayed the name of one of the most famous stores in the world.
Harrods is often referred to as the most beautiful store in the world. It has a storied and glamorous history. However, underneath Harrods, glitz and glamour was a toxic, unsafe, and abusive environment.
For its part, Harrods says it has a settlement process available to women who say they were attacked by Mr. Al-Fayed and are insisting the business is now very different. In other news, the Lebanese economy minister has told the BBC the situation in his country is escalating by the hour. It follows days of explosions and Israeli airstrikes. Meanwhile, a senior member of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement is reported to have been killed in a strike in Syria. A long-running measure of how UK consumers feel about their finances and the economy shows a sharp fall in confidence this month. Separate figures indicate government borrowing rose unexpectedly last month to £13.7 billion. The data points to a tricky balancing act for Rachel Reeves in her autumn budget. Domestic abuse specialists will be embedded in 999 control rooms in England and Wales as part of the government's pledge to halve violence against women and girls in a decade. The measure is part of Raneem's Law in memory of Raneem Ouda, who was murdered by her estranged husband in 2018. And new figures show the prison population has gone up slightly 10 days after the government released hundreds of inmates early to ease overcrowding pressures. The number of people in prison in England and Wales fell by more than 2,000 last Friday, but has now risen by 73 inmates. Sport now with Shoji Saka.
Surrey have won the county championship title for a third straight year after Somerset lost their match against Lancashire at Old Trafford by 168 runs. Surrey have become the first county to win three straight championships since Yorkshire in the 1960s. Meanwhile, the venue for England's second test in Pakistan next month has been switched for the second test, that is, less than 2 weeks before the series will begin. The second test was due to be played in Karachi, but due to renovation work, that's been now moved to Multan, where the first test is also taking place. And Emma Raducanu's Korean Open quarterfinal has been postponed today due to wet conditions in Seoul. She will now face top seed Daria Kazakina tomorrow.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as the coming storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Welcome to the Ellis James and John Robbins podcast. There comes a time in every digital DJ's life where they must move on from the past. Here in the Ellis James and John Robbins studio, we're no longer spring chickens. In fact, we're summer cocks.
That's fine.
That is fine.
That's okay.
That is fine.
That is fine.
And just as summer cocks lather themselves in sun cream to protect from harmful rays, we too must protect ourselves from the ultraviolet light of our formative years. For Ellis, this has culminated in a household initiative called Project Millennium. Any items that predate January the 1st, 2000, be it a box of NMEs, Gorky's fanzines and old MOT failure certificates from his Nissan Bluebird, must gain a majority vote from the committee of Izzy, Betty and Steph in order to avoid the bin. Like all great mob bosses, he's got Steph in his pocket like so many nickels and dimes, by promising him that he can put a new Hot Wheels in his sporran for every item he votes to save. Betty, however, is proving harder to bribe, being, as she is, in complete contempt of Ellis as both a father and a human. So far, the only item to avoid the cull is a 1997 receipt from the Westgate pub in Cardiff, which documents a pint of Foster's at sub £2. It was only saved when Ellis pleaded that following the Westgate's closure in 2009, it may have significant historical value. And when Betty mimed tearing it in half, he cried for the first time in two decades. For Dave, the process is a little easier. He and Hannah live in a sleek modern house, which painstakingly recreates their favourite display rooms in Manchester IKEA. They've even got a checkout in the garage. Hannah was careful to install shelves so shallow that hoarding was not an option. However, after one brief argument, Dave did agree to part with three wraps of chalk he found in an old Kangol boot bag.
And that's not true, is it?
And that leaves John. Much of what he's seeking to remove from his past doesn't manifest in trinkets or old files, but in what his therapist describes as a full-body reaction. However, the time has come to confront the bag of death. Over the past 3 weeks, John has spent afternoons sifting through a harrowing collection of teenage ephemera. Taking regular breaks to vape and swear, he made his way through over 500 poems, 18,
oh my God.
18 introduction pages to unwritten novels, and a typed screenplay about a girl he kissed in 1997. All have now been consigned to a recycling centre where operatives stood bemused at the sight of a man sobbing next to a box of used Brita filters. But it wasn't all worrying waste. Saved from the tip were his tickets for Brian May at the Colston Hall in 1998, a collection of marbles, and autographs of the 1993 Australian cricket team. A job well done.
Right. Now, for our listeners, maybe new listeners, the bag of death has been mentioned on this show for years. It was a bin bag of teenage possessions that you found so embarrassing. It was triple bagged up and masking taped. And I was told for years, I've been charged with disposing of it in the event of your death.
Yeah.
And I've promised you that I wouldn't look in it.
Mm.
So the bag of death has loomed large on this show for a very long time now, but you've been through it.
Yep.
And have chucked out the vast majority.
It's all gone.
Have you really? I thought that was just for the script.
But no, it's all gone.
Is it not really funny to look back at this
stuff? No, it's absolutely awful.
But what if you want to write an autobiography?
Then I will be glad that I don't use any of that as source material. It was harrowing.
But then your autobiography wouldn't be a true... It wouldn't be a true portrayal of what you were like as a teenager.
But my autobiography... I don't want any of it to include one of 500 poems, all of whom describe various girls at school as all beauty.
That's good.
You did such a funny thing to me the other night. You texted me a diary entry from the bag of death about something that had happened at, it was like the NME brat tour.
Now that I have kept, because that made me smile.
From about 1998 or 1999. Mm. And it's a really funny diary entry. And I laughed out loud when I saw it, actually. But you'd redacted the rest.
Yes.
You sent me the three or four lines that you thought were funny.
Yeah.
But it was a screenshot of the entire page. So 80% of it was redacted.
Redacted, yeah.
Like you'd been writing letters during World War One.
Yeah. It was the redacted section was just very overly powerful testimony about a friend of mine. But I did keep that because that made me smile, because one of the sentences is just, I like Robin.
Yeah. Aww.
And there's another. So the prose, we're on sort of terra firma, because the prose was like what I'd done, or and it, there was a, basically the story of me and Robin's first ever house party we went to together where we bonded. So I've kept that.
Oh, that's nice.
The poetry, however, was essentially stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
That rhymed badly.
What's really weird is many years ago when we were on Radio X, I read out my gig diaries, because I've never kept a diary. But when I first started doing stand-up, I used to write about how the show had gone and my thoughts about the show. So in effect, it was a diary of the time. And I was 25 and 26. And when I read those out on the show, they were genuine. I didn't change them. Yeah, they were genuine. And what I found so chilling was I was a grown man. I was an adult. I was 25, 26. You know, I could have been a homeowner. I could have been a parent. It was, I was grown up and I didn't recognize that person because I was such a goon. But obviously you're even younger. So you're a teenager. So can you not give yourself a bit of more of a free pass?
No, I did do. And I sort of like, once I've been through it all. So my rule was, if it makes me cringe, it goes out. If it makes me smile, it stays.
Okay.
So we had, I think, 3 smiles. I'm going to say in the region of 600 cringes. It was a really, really troubling experience. Yeah. And it made me realize, like, just how troubled this boy was.
Yeah.
But also,
I'll bet you.
But also how glad I was that he had that outlet of reams and reams and reams and reams
so
of stuff.
Terrifying though about social media and the modern world. Now you'd be tweeting that stuff.
I don't know that you would, because otherwise Twitter would be full of teenagers writing poems. I'm sure they do it. I think they still keep it pretty.
But I think people still tweet stuff that in the cool light of they regret.
Yeah.
Because it's out there then, your digital footprint.
I would like to think most teenagers still have some kind of like private repository for sort of their thoughts and feelings and experiences, like diaries and poetry and stuff, or lyrics or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thanked it for its service, because that's what you got to do if you chuck something out that you sort of are having to persuade yourself to chuck out. You go, thank you for your service. Mm. And we move on. A few weeks ago, Dave revealed that his dissertation involved making 3 15-minute audio packages on the past, present and future of Rush Radio.
That's coursework, Dave, but it's not a dissertation.
I think you'll find my first argues that it is. Thanks. Carry on, John.
I found a report from my second year at university yesterday.
Is it good stuff?
No.
But is it good stuff podcast-wise?
I've chucked it.
Oh, John.
Content first.
It was like he really needs to pull his socks up. It uses the phrase, this is not a subject that can be blagged or busked.
What, medieval English?
Yeah, not good memories.
No. Oh, John, I'd have had it.
No,
I'm going to be a biographer. I need all of the source material I can get.
Can you imagine? You do my biography.
Yes.
What are you going to do without me to write it for you?
Yeah, it'd be a pamphlet.
I would talk to people you'd been at school with.
You would lose interest in editing my Wikipedia page.
No way. I would do a couple of hours a week.
And it would never be written.
And it would take 10 years to publish, but that is fine, by which point you'd have died and everyone would have forgotten about you.
Unbelievably, that was the extent of the exams in his final year. He also, quote, went to a couple of seminars and did, quote, a few written bits and bobs.
Yeah.
John's initial response was, Dave, you should hang your head in shame. But Dave did emerge from Sheffield Hallam with a shiny first in media studies.
Thank you.
So who really had the last laugh?
There we go.
Well, after some intense digging around in his loft and a lengthy search for someone who could convert the now defunct medium of minidiscs to MP3, we can reveal that parts of Dave's dissertation have been digitized.
Wow.
Dave duly handed over the tapes to our production team, and we can hear some of them today. Mm. Dave, when did you last hear this?
When I made it. So I found the discs. I took them into Five Live, and some very helpful chaps called Peter and Ben ripped them in real time. Bit of lingo there for you. And just sent them straight across. So I haven't heard this. And I'm not entirely sure. I generally don't know what to expect, because it might be absolutely sensational. And you guys might go, it's a shame that a first is as high as the markings go at uni, because this is actually
so we're
better.
Actually,
yeah, you should have got a first plus.
Yeah, yeah. What we're about to hear has been marked as a first by Sheffield Hallam University.
I'm quite nervous.
Let's not criticise Sheffield Hallam University as an institution.
Absolutely not.
I'm not.
You're saying
I'm just saying its media studies course in the early 2000s was a farce.
It wasn't.
It clearly is, Dave.
Well, I've done
we
all right.
We haven't heard it yet, and Dave has done all right.
This is like a 2-week project I would have done in media studies A level, not a 3-year course.
I told you, I wrote some bits and bobs. I went to a few seminars.
Ellis, what are you expecting to hear from the archives?
What I'm really looking forward to hearing is how Dave's voice has changed.
Mm. Ah.
So are you playing a presenter?
If I recall, I'm the anchor.
Yeah.
The voice of authority, if you like. The voice of education, actually, and the voice of knowledge. And what I'm doing is I'm informing the listener on various facets of the student radio station, I think. But I genuinely can't remember anything. I can't remember anything else I actually say.
Neither Ellis and I have heard these, but our production team here have kindly given us little descriptions. So we have a few clips from the present section of Dave's groundbreaking dissertation. In the first section of the package, young Dave is looking at the importance of news to his student radio station.
Oh, okay.
Over the past 3 years, Sheffield Hallam's student radio station, Rush Radio, has undergone many changes. From studio relocation to website relocation, many techniques have been used to gain a wider listenership, including being granted a 2-week FM licence in 2004, and many multimedia options becoming available through the internet. However, a basic feature that has not been successfully implemented within Rush Radio is that of news. With any radio station, news has always been an effective way to target its desired audience. Yeah. News has the power to shape a station and bring a community together every hour of the day. From vox pops to interviews, news is something every radio station, no matter how small, should incorporate into its scheduling.
Dave.
It's good!
Your voice hadn't broken.
I know, that's
And also,
bad.
Judging by the speed at which you were reading it out, you were on ecstasy, Dave. That is fantastic. Also,
it was like someone had sped up the auto cue and couldn't be stopped.
Because it's 2000.
That might be a sample rate issue, I imagine.
Oh, might it, Dave?
Because it's 2004, you have to use an audio cue when you hear the word internet. So use the dial-up modem noise, which means you can date this to within about 6 months.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
I have to say,
it feels modern.
It feels modern. It's just you sound so young.
Do you know what I noticed and I was impressed with? I think I wrote better than I thought I probably did. Mm-hmm. Like that was pretty decent sentences, right?
Pretty decent sentences. The first from Sheffield Hallam for pretty decent sentences. No, I thought it was good. Yeah.
It sounds like proper radio.
And if my 12-year-old brought that back home from school, I would say you deserve that gold star. The next clip, the young Dave sets up a case study with a local radio station.
Barnsley's local radio station is Dern FM. They have a dedicated team of reporters to cover both local and national events for the station. A news bulletin is presented every hour with great emphasis on the Barnsley community. Dern FM's news editor, James Marriott, explains why news is such a vital tool to any successful station.
I think particularly nowadays it's more and more important is how good and how relevant your news is to your listeners since the advent of things like MP3 players.
Dave, you're Jude Bellingham. You're Cristiano Ronaldo. You're a teenage superstar.
Yes, I suppose so.
It sounds like actual radio.
James Marriott was one of my early mentors and is a lovely chap.
Fair play to him for, you know, being interviewed for a student project.
He was very generous with his time, I recall. We still chat every now and then, actually.
What, about the importance of news to sort of turn FM?
The importance of MP3s.
You're sort of explaining pretty broad strokes what radio is, aren't you, Dave?
And what news is, John?
Yeah.
Well, is that? But was that not the assignment to explain radio to sort of a like a tribe who'd never heard it before?
Yeah,
is that,
well, it's the assignment I gave to myself. Yes. And it
you're
was
allowed
the past
to give yourself your own assignments. And that was 3 15-minute long audio packages with bits and bobs of writing.
Bits and bobs, Ellis. Yeah, that was exactly right.
So next, young Dave argues that Rush Radio must strongly consider the introduction of news in order to stay relevant to its student audience.
Rush Radio will be entering its fourth year as Sheffield Hallam student radio station in September 2006. The station has now built a strong foundation in terms of student interest and website quality. It's now time for Hallam students to take the next step. News is one of the most effective ways to identify a station. It is crucial for Rush Radio to understand that if they want to continue growing as an outlet for the student community, they need an informative news bulletin on the hour, every hour. Vicky Butterworth is involved with Rush Radio. She thinks content and style would be an important factor should Rush Radio decide to use news bulletins.
You could have on, like, what's going on entertainment-wise, focus it on, have it more student news rather than, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mind it. I think it's...
Well, although you mentioned the word internet.
Yeah.
And then missed a great opportunity to use the dial-up modem sound effect.
No, I don't know over egg it, Ellis.
Okay.
You've got to be careful.
So you've used it once already.
There's a touch of class that needs to be considered
yes.
here.
So who was Vicky Butterworth? Did you work with her?
Vicky Butterworth was on my media studies course. Loved a girl. I don't think I've seen her since, but very nice person. I think in there, what you get is a real smorgasbord of information when it comes to what student radio was like. And it was a challenge, student radio.
But folks, there's more. Though Dave believed he was only handing over his seminal piece on the state of Rush Radio, deep within the mini discs, the production team also unearthed a little gem, which we might hear later on, Dave.
From the mini disc?
Yes, Dave. It's time for Ellis to make a connection with someone from Wales he hasn't met. Or will he? It's the Cymru connection. Yes, every week Ellis plies a Walian with questions about their upbringing, their identity, in the search of a connection. Last week, in a textbook outing of the Cymru connection, Ellis found a link to call a match from Chepstow by his dissertation supervisor, Bill Jones.
And then I went to watch Wales play Turkey, and Matt was there, and I bumped into him at half-time.
Really?
And I bumped into his dad as well.
Good grief.
Yeah, and his dad said, Matt really liked being on the show. I was great having him on the show.
Ellis's overall success rate currently stands at 63%. He's achieved a connection with 5 of our 8 callers. So let's see how he gets on. We have a caller on the line from Wales. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello. I am going to ask you no more questions.
Don't sound hugely enthusiastic.
You're here under duress.
Can't say anything.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, good.
Good.
Very
he knows
good.
The rules. Very good. Good stuff.
Already Ellis's brain is trying to place that accent. So we have exactly 60 seconds on the clock. Go.
Where are you from?
Glassy.
Slightly, what school do you go to?
That's what given us rather.
Oh, how old are you?
42.
You're 42? Oh, do you know Gareth Smith? You must do.
Gareth Smith?
Yeah, Gareth Smith, who's married to Emma. Used to work for Mentor Iaith in Carmarthen. Come on, mate. You're 42.
No.
What was his name? He used to play rugby and he used to work in Clwb Ifor Bach, and he is your age and he is...
It feels close.
He's literally your age, Ellis.
He's your age. Ascol Gyfnes Trondheim, 42. And you don't know Gareth Smith? I don't believe you.
Don't force his hand.
Ask more questions.
I'm trying to think of the people I know. I don't need any more questions. I've got everything I need. What university do you go to?
Southampton Solo.
That's no good. And that's time.
Sorry.
That's time.
That's time. It felt
a bit like he lost it there, Dave.
Well, it just felt so close. It felt so close.
What year were you born?
Didn't feel close at all.
Are you kidding?
1982. I have so many connections. We have never met, but we have so many connections. It will blow your mind.
Go on,
Let's go through them all. And let's watch this Bonnie man fall to pieces.
Pardon?
So I was born in Carmarthen.
Right.
But everybody was, because it's Glengarry Hospital.
Of course, there's no Labour ward internationally, yes.
Okay. First off, I know him because I grew up with him, Scott Quinnell.
Yeah. But Scott Quinnell's older than you. I was never going to get to Quinnell, bearing in mind that you're 42. Scott in his 50s. Sorry. Right, okay.
So this is... I'm sorry about this. Lee Trundle.
How do you know Lee Trundle? Oh, you played Llanelli Vets football with him, did you?
No. Just like going out in Swansea. Well, so that's not going to help you. Ian Evans.
What?
I know. Okay, so his parents moved to Pembrey. They remember their stepfather.
Yeah, he grew up next door to my grandmother.
Exactly, so Mags.
My mother did a child study on him for university. I've got access to Evans.
Mags is my date. She's a widow now. At all of my family parties. Kelly Brown, because we're patron of the same charity, the British Drumming Association.
Kelly Brown, a rugby player?
Yes.
Who I performed on stage with. This is big and significant.
This is a shame.
What's your name?
This is a shame.
My name's Adewale Richards. Okay. Abby Sarkin-Brad. Also, my very, very close friend and neighbour was Mr. Omarod.
You're joking. Who taught me maths. And yeah. Heather Lewis must have taught at school when you were there. Did she not?
I don't think Heather was.
Oh, she went. She went after she arrived thereafter. Okay, all right.
God, we're swimming connections, aren't we?
Yes.
My mother lectured at Trinity College the same time as her mother worked there.
Oh, my God.
Dave, he's fallen into a barrel of Welshmen and come out sucking a Scot.
Yeah.
It goes on, by the way.
Oh,
I went
no.
to every young Royal Welsh Young Farmers members bar.
And I even worked
the time
there.
You worked there.
I went there on the infamous Champions Day, 99, when we ran out of beer and everyone complained.
Yeah, but luckily we had Strongbow. do you remember the time that somebody tipped over somebody who was using a portaloo?
Yeah.
And caused it. Yeah, that was my friend Hugh.
Yes.
And that was an international incident.
It certainly did.
Did you say that caused an international incident?
National.
Yeah, well, basically, regional.
Regional incident.
And my local pub, it was the scene of where the Rebecca Rioters used to meet.
Which one's that? Because my local
pub... Stargate Five Rose.
Ellis,
me.
This
I got so caught up in trying to remember the name of that boy who used to work at club. I will get it in about half an hour's
you
time.
You got so caught up in just asking where he went to university
because I had enough.
You didn't,
No, but I did. If we were on a sun lounger in Magaluf, I would get there.
Yeah, you keep saying this,
but I was under pressure.
You spent 40 seconds just going.
Do you know what happened, Al? You had too much too soon. You got very far very quickly.
The spoke of an estrada is huge for me.
Within five
also,
seconds.
Also, your age.
Yeah. Yes.
We've never met, but it's almost certainly we'd have been in the same bars because we used to go every Thursday night for student night.
Yes.
So almost certainly. And also, I'm not a celebrity in any shape or form, but when you were in the sexiest man in Wales list.
Oh, yeah.
Not sure what number you were.
I was in at number 33.
I was number 23.
So you're sexier than me.
And I'm not even a celebrity.
But what were you... What's the sexy part?
I used to do stuff with... I look like a fat Jason Statham. Which wasn't...
Like below you? Yeah. Why are you sexy, Adewale?
You know, or a celebrity. I used to do a bit of polo, organising polo matches in Cardiff. The one that my bubbins hated.
You organised polo matches and that made you a sexy celebrity, according to the Welsh press? You know.
And I also worked, I had a column in the Western Mail as well. That might have been something. Oh. But yeah.
So, thank you so much. I mean, you've provided over 10 connections there that Ellis failed to get amongst his grunting and his wheezing. Yeah. But we will, that takes him down to 50% success.
I've got a very funny, that boy I was thinking of, I've got a very funny anecdote about him ringing. The kind of phone number you used to see in the back of magazines and then falling asleep and then getting a huge phone bill. And I think if I tell you that anecdote, you'll know who it is, and then we'll be able to remember who that was. But that's going to have to be for when we meet, Arwell. I can't believe... Oh, okay. I'm a failure.
No.
Yes.
I'm a failure.
This is designed to be difficult.
And I don't have value, Arwell.
Thank you so much, Arwell, for calling in. And who knows?
Nice to go to this, Arwell.
Maybe we'll have another Cymru connection next week.
And good afternoon to you.
Well, ta-da.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon to you too. We've got loads more coming up, but first, here's the Five Live News.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And with the headlines, I'm Richard Foster. Lawyers for some of the 37 women who've accused Mohamed Al-Fayed of rape and sexual assault say the former Harrods owner was a monster and the store enabled him. The billionaire is alleged to have set up a system where young women were found to work as his secretary so he could assault them. Harrods says the business is very different now. Hezbollah says it's fired a number of rockets into northern Israel, targeting army sites. It follows a wave of Israeli airstrikes in southern Lebanon, which the military says hit more than 100 Hezbollah rocket launchers and a weapons depot. There's been a big fall in consumer confidence. GfK's consumer confidence barometer had been recovering after years of rising prices and higher interest rates. And the search for Cinnamon, the escaped capybara, is starting again. The animal escaped from her enclosure at Hoo Zoo in Telford in Shropshire last week. Since then, she's been living nearby in woodland. As the news, Shoujo Saka has the sport.
Surrey's third successive Vitality County Championship title was confirmed after rivals Somerset were beaten by 168 runs by Lancashire at Old Trafford today. It means Surrey become the first county since the 1960s to win three consecutive county championships. Head coach Gareth Batty says there is a brilliant atmosphere at the club at the moment.
It's credit to what everybody at the Oval is creating. There's a wonderful feel about the place. It's a real drive for people to be better and be part of something that's just a little bit bigger than an individual. And long may that continue, because it's impressive that some superstar England players want to come back and play for us whenever they get a chance.
Golf and play in the second round at the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth was suspended due to the threat of lightning earlier. Let's find out if they've restarted and join our correspondent Ian Carter.
They have, in very pleasant sunshine, 75-minute break because of the threat of lightning. And what a resumption from the leader, Matthew Baldwin, the player from Southport at the par 5 17th, rolling in a birdie putt that has extended his lead to 5 shots now, 13 under par. Antoine Rosner has joined the group at 8 under par. That also includes Billy Horschel and Tristan Lawrence. Aaron Rye also going nicely at 7 under par alongside fellow Englishman Tommy Fleetwood and Andy Sullivan. Very shortly, Rory McIlroy will be embarking on his second round. He is at 5 under par.
Ian, thank you. Bayern Munich head coach Vincent Kompany has called for an annual cap on the number of games a player can play amid concerns over workload. His comments come following a claim from Manchester City midfielder Rodri that players are close to going on strike in protest at an increase in games. Several high-profile players have spoken about the demands of an ever-increasing fixture list. The new Women's Super League season gets underway tonight with champions Chelsea hosting Aston Villa. It will be the first match in charge in the WSL for the new Chelsea manager Sonia Bonpastor. Well, as well as that, Chelsea have added the England fullback Lucy Bronze to their squad this year. Former Chelsea goalkeeper Siobhan Chamberlain says her experience could be key as Chelsea chase success in Europe this season.
She's won the Champions League in two different countries, wanting to be the first ever female player to do that in three different countries would be absolutely phenomenal. And she's just the type of player that will drive the rest of the squad on, drive those winning standards, but also kind of have that ability to back up those standards when she puts some performances on the pitch week in, week out.
And Ferrari's Charles Leclerc set the pace ahead of McLaren's Lando Norris in first practice at the Singapore Grand Prix. World champion Max Verstappen was fourth fastest in that session. You can listen to second practice on Five Sports Extra from 2 o'clock. That is the latest from BBC Sport.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Mikel Arteta to Arsenal is confirmed.
We were sad when he leaves. He's a ball for beyond a good manager.
Arsenal have confirmed the signing of Declan Rice.
Manchester City have agreed a deal to sign Erling Haaland.
They are champions again. They've won it 4 years running.
I think Arsenal get even closer again.
Their level is higher and higher.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Welcome to you, Manchester.
Manchester City against Arsenal.
Listen, Sunday from 12
on 5 Live and BBC Sounds.
This is the Ellis James and John Robbins show on BBC Radio 5 Live. Right then, folks, it's time to call a comedian. That's right.
Not a bad jingle.
Not a bad jingle.
And that opinion actually counts from today's guest.
Because it's a musician's opinion.
It's a musician's opinion, and we are very pleased to say live in the studio with us is the doyen of the digital keyboard, Mr. David O'Doherty.
The music, there's such a difference, isn't there, between musician and musical comedian. Like the drop-off in status is colossal.
I've seen some musical comedians who play guitar on stage who I can play guitar better than.
Yeah.
And I haven't picked up a guitar for 6 years. But we've got David here, not just to solve your dilemmas, but also to host a made-up game. We're getting double DOD. So this is the problem you've got to solve. This is from Ewan.
Okay.
Ewan says, my lovely housemate Joe and I have completely opposite outlooks when it comes to tea towel etiquette. I believe that tea towels should be used for drying of dishes, the toweling off of hands, and maybe drying the work surface after wiping with a sponge on special occasions.
Wow.
Once used, the tea towel is folded neatly and placed back on the kitchen radiator in an orderly fashion. Joe, on the other hand, shows complete and utter disrespect to the tea towels in our possession. He will use them like a dirty shop rag found in the back alley of a mechanic's workshop. Oil spills and general kitchen grime will be mopped up without a second thought. Towels will be screwed up and shoved to the back of the work surface or hob mid-cooking, waiting to be covered in yet more food splatters. This leaves me having to wash them at least every other day due to the disgusting state in which they're left. I've raised my concerns with him, and he brushes them off with little regard. How do I convey my angst / get him to change his ways and show a little bit more respect? The poor tea towels.
I mean, I hate to sound like this. I hate to be this guy, but Ewan, you young people with your Brat Summers and your Hochtours. There was a time.
What's a Hochtour?
John isn't on social media. He won't know about this.
I'm up on the latest trends.
There was a time when, kind of like what the donkey was in the pre-tractor era, where the tea towel was much more the workhorse of the house.
Yes.
Like drying up. We only got a dishwasher in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So drying up was such a huge part.
My mum would always have a tea towel over her shoulder.
Yes. Yeah. My mum used to do that as well. I'll wash and you dry.
Yeah.
That was a big, and I always wanted to dry.
Yeah. Like, so the only time Jesus was ever mentioned growing up in my house was when someone didn't want to dry. The joke was, we'll leave that for the baby Jesus. And the Lord during the night would dry it with his celestial breath. It was a wonderful thing. And so this was an era where we had, I mean, even in what Ewan is describing at the start, in his regime, he's using the tea towel to dry his hands and to wipe a table. Mm. No. In the golden age of the tea towel. And also, let me add into this. I think it might be the case that no one in the world has ever thrown out a tea towel.
Yes.
Like, very good
observation.
The tea towels that I had growing up are still the tea towels in. There's one that's the slate mines of Wales.
Yes.
That I got on a school trip. That doesn't seem to be losing any of its color or anything.
Because I bet it doesn't absorb a single milliliter of water.
Yes, I know that kind of tea towel.
Because those decorative ones, they're almost like you might as well be drying with cling film.
Yeah. It's like they've been lacquered.
What I would say here is, when
similar to the, let's use the donkey analogy. When the tractor came in, suddenly all these donkeys were just roaming the countryside then because farmers set them free. They'd no use for them. And I feel there was a lost period for the tea towel. But I also feel that in the last decade, the tea towel has found its feet again.
Like vinyl.
As another very bad material to dry things with.
Hipsters use them now. Yeah.
So what's your solution for you, Ewan?
My solution is to accept the new role of what a tea towel is.
Which is sort of for everything.
Which is basically Joe. Like someone calls to your house and has just been shot. Mm. Okay, say for example, they're bleeding out. What do you grab? You know, you certainly don't grab one of your favorite t-shirts.
No, of course not.
You get a tea towel.
That's
essentially what it's for.
But I think that only works if they stop drying up with them, because you wouldn't dry up with a blood-sodden tea towel. And I think what I'm taking from what you said, which I think is very true, is you don't need to dry up.
You don't need to dry up.
Let them drain. Let God's breath do the work.
There was a myth in my family that if you didn't dry glasses, the water rolling off them left some sort of mark, residual mark on them, which I don't think is true. I think that was just a lie we were told.
Depends on how hard your water is.
Or a smell. Right. What was that phrase you said? Egg bum tea. The egg bum tea smell.
So my point here is that Ewan, the letter writer, I am coming on Team Joe, I think, and he needs to take a chill, get laid. He needs just to chill out and accept that there is a new role for the tea towel.
And if he does get laid, obviously the tea towel can then play a part in that coming up process. Thank you very much, David, for solving that conundrum. Okay, everyone, and a remarkable run of form on the made-up games for me. I think if I won 10 of the last 11...
Yeah, and you've won the last five.
I started off with an amazing run of form, which is why I'm still winning overall, incredibly.
Well, it's Ellis leads 3-2, with John 30 love up in the sixth game.
Okay, well, time to see if I can continue that record with a made-up game.
A made-up game. Help you on a journey, a made-up game to get you through the night. How big, how far, how small, hey, well, we don't mind at all, 'cause it's the way the game is played that makes it right. And we're in for happy days when it's Ellis, John and Dave, and we're all together playing a made-up game. We're all together playing a made-up game.
My friend Ishta texted me, he said, it just reminds me of the Postman Pat theme.
I think it's brilliant. It's very charming. I've been listening to Danny Champion of the World a lot recently to get myself to sleep.
Well, they're all dull, but...
Yeah. To calm me troubled mind.
You're 41, John.
42.
42.
So, Dave Masterman.
Yeah.
David could also have done 80 Daves around the world.
Yeah, he could be the Irish Dave.
We've added one in England, though, already, haven't we?
John Dave lives Benson in Ireland, you absolute goose.
I know, but he's with us today in England. Oh, yeah. Remember, it's where they're calling in from, Ellis.
Yes.
Dave, what's today's made-up game?
Well, with David in the studio, we thought we'd make use of your musical talents, David. Okay. So here's a game we're calling David's Odocadities.
Oh, my God.
That's your next tour show title.
Yeah, it is good. David O'Docadities.
This is similar to what we were saying about the podcast earlier, where I like to think these are beautiful epic songs. Yeah. But no, they're O'Docadities.
Imagine.
That's what I do.
Imagine complaining that O'Docadities had sold out to Edinburgh. I can't get a ticket for O'Docadities. But the whole run is sold out.
So... fun game. David, you will play a verse of your O'Docadity on your tiny piano or on your keyboard.
Yeah.
It's Ellis and John's jobs to make up the final couple of lines or the final verse or whatever rhyming creativity you fancy going with.
Can I use a computer?
No, you don't have time because you've got to go straight in as David stops.
Okay.
So you're straight in with your version of whatever you want.
I need access to Rhyme Zone.
Okay.
No.
Here's what I want to bring to this.
Great.
Okay. Don't, as a songwriter myself, don't concentrate on the rhyme. That'll hold you back. Just go with the emotion of what's inspired.
Hunger.
By these half songs.
Right.
And I think that's how the rhymes will take care of themselves, ultimately.
So there's three rounds in total. When not in play, because you're both going to be attempting the same three songs, there's going to be three rounds, you can put it, well, you go into our soundproof booth, which is essentially headphones with library music on.
I can only feel three emotions, though, two of which are sporting montages and the other one is hunger.
You know what? I think you could possibly bring that into this.
John, don't put on I've not finished the rules
Dave,
yet.
Dave, I can hear you.
Okay, fine. Is there any music playing?
No.
Okay, fine. Yes, we're not in play. Put the headphones on so you can't hear how the other person got on. Otherwise, you've just got more time to think about your lyrics and your return to David's odocodity.
Yeah.
Great. So are the rules clear? Ellis, we'll go with you first.
Yeah. So I just need to finish a line.
So, David, is it going to be clear when you're kind of wanting Ellis to pop in?
Yeah.
It's just one line, not another verse. It's just whatever you want.
Whatever the next idea is.
I misunderstood the last game to such a profound level. I'm trying not to make the same mistake. Like when I was asked what the chief ingredients of sweet potato and peanut curry were, I said onion. So I don't want to repeat that mistake again.
I've written three half songs. They cover the main great topics of songs, which respectively are love, wisdom, and travel. That's all you need to know. We're going to begin with love, though.
Okay, John, headphones on. Producer Michael, music on. Give us a thumbs up, John, when the music's playing.
They're very comfy. Oh, here we go.
Right, the music's on. Should we fade out the music of the made-up game jingle? All right, Ellis, listen carefully. This song will go to both you and John, so you both have an attempt, and I will judge, or maybe David and I. David, in fact, you can judge who is the most impressive
retort to your
song.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, baby, it's your special day. And look just what I'm giving you. It's an item of mine I've treasured for a very long time. To show you that my love is true. It's
a DVD. Means so much to me. Watch you whenever you want. Is a DVD. Means so much to me.
What DVD is it? It's got to be a specific one.
The Bourne Identity.
Okay.
One to three.
Okay.
I mean, we'll obviously mark it after we've got John's version. John, headphones off. Great, so...
They're really noise-cancelling.
Are they good? So you didn't hear a thing?
No.
Great, Ellis, whack them on. You've already played. So the same song again, David. Here we go.
Okay.
Oh, baby, it's a special day. And look just what I'm giving you. It's an item of mine I've treasured for a very long time. To show you that my love is true, it's...
What?
You need to keep on singing.
Oh, right.
Oh, my... How is this possibly...
Because you're starting...
I went to the five there. Show you that my love is true.
Two,
and he even
three,
said,
four.
It's...
IKEA. Front and rear. The warranty lasts for an industry leading 7 years. I've had it valeted. It's coming off a palleted. And it will take away your tears.
Wow. That's some present.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're giving some present.
I love her.
Right, well, that's round one.
It was the its that put me off.
Yes, and to be fair, Ellis, you stumbled a bit on the its as well, okay, until you figured out what was going
on.
You
don't want its. I mean,
that's fine.
There's a not dissimilar structure to the other ones.
That's okay. Now I know.
So, John, just to give you a heads up, Ellis's was on a DVD.
Oh, nice.
Which is nice. Nice, the Bourne Identity.
One, two, and three.
The box set.
Yeah, the box set. Yeah, and John, good. IKEA. Yeah.
Hang on, weirdly, it wasn't the box set, because you just were going on at the start, it was one DVD, so it's a old school burned, blank DVD. Yeah. You put all three on, so... Yeah.
David, there's no criteria here. It's just whichever one you thought was most creative, most thoughtful, I suppose most in time with the music. So take a second.
The rhyme's probably a factor as well,
Dave. Well, David did say the rhyming wasn't important. Don't forget, it's more about passion.
I just thought the Kia in this case.
I would agree. Just a touch.
So you're still in. Don't give up.
Yeah.
Still everything still in to play the for. Game.
I'm in the game. Do I need to put these on?
Yeah, we'll start with John this time. Okay, so it's song number two. John, are you all good to go straight in again?
What music is this?
It's library music. It's a lovely bit of holding music.
Oh, right, okay.
Can you hear us?
Yes, you're going to have to whack it up.
I think you need to take these out, you fool, because we're on. Cheap. Ellis was still wearing his in-ear headphones from the show.
Right, so let me just put my microphone next to David's keyboard. Take it away.
John.
Yeah.
Grandson, climb up on my knee. I've something big to say to thee. I'm very, very old and my tale's almost told. But before my last sod is turned, let me tell you a very important thing I've learned.
Never stack a dishwasher. Load it piece by piece. Don't create upside down cups, and then you will decease.
You will decease?
Yeah, you're done.
I had no idea.
Like you said, don't worry about the rhymes, they just come.
John, I'm very impressed with you at this game. It's
and
good
I've never
stuff.
Been on Just a Minute, Dave.
No. Whip him off, Ellis.
Okay.
So John's offered up his attempt. We won't reveal any more than that at this stage.
So I was trying to go with more of a folk vibe. Try and even turn that up a notch.
Maybe. Great. Okay, so John doesn't need the headphones on because he's already played. David, hit us again.
Will I change the instrument to harpsichord?
That's fine, yeah. Oh.
Okay. And grandson, climb upon my knee. I've something big to say to thee. I'm very, very old. My last ball has been bowled. But before the sod is turned, let me tell you a very important thing I've learned.
I wish I'd spent less time on my phone. It was a waste of time. I could have been learning modern languages, but instead I was reading all the reviews online.
Bravo.
But I felt quite emotional.
You can learn modern languages on your phone.
Yeah,
what are you implying there?
Lyrically,
it's good to question sometimes where Tim Rice is coming from with this. Yeah.
David.
Okay.
Who was victorious in round two?
I mean, I'm not just saying this till we've got something to play for, but... Ellis was better in that one.
Yeah. But again, too strong. Are you impressed with the quality? Is this what you're expecting, David?
It's really good, but you just put them under pressure and they come up with this stuff. Great setups by me, you would have to
they
say.
They really are.
Thank you.
The Odoka
these headphones, Dave? Because these are fantastic.
Stop trivialising the game by asking how much the kit costs.
Well, it's all to play for going into round three. Song three for the win.
I need some music on.
Music on. Here we go. All right, John's bopping. John's in. John's dancing. David, over to you.
Come with me on a holiday. We could kick back by the pool, dancing in a tiki hut, drinking from a coconut. Relaxing is the only rule. That's why I'm taking you
to Spain. Don't forget to hire a car, 'cause then you ain't relying on public transport. You'll have a better time by far.
Wow.
So good. Okay, John.
I wonder if trips there will spike. Can someone check the data just after?
So, we've got Alice's.
Yep.
Wow. I was... that voice. Where does it come from? Dusty. It's like Dusty was right here.
Yeah. But John's still in it.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah, John is still in it.
Still work to be done.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Come with me on a holiday. We can kick back by the pool, dancing in a tiki hut, drinking from a coconut. Relaxing is the only rule. That's why I'm taking you
to Thornbury, South Gloucestershire, where all the great comedians come from. Joel Dommett and Russell Howard, James Dowdeswell and John Robbins too. You'll have a glass at the Knot and a pint at the Castle. Then you'll go where John used to live and have a cry. Then you'll go past Hoarders, if it's still open, and the Grand Shapps has pedestrianised the high street.
Wow.
I just had a little solo at the end there.
Yeah. The solo was good. I enjoyed that.
3 fantastic rounds. They really were, but there can only be one winner, can't there, David?
I hate to pick this on terms of holiday destination, but the idea of being like, where is Joel Dommett from? Let's go there on holidays. Whereas...
Where did Ellis take you to?
Spain!
Oh, you love Spain.
Spain! So I just, it's so, so close. And you know what? It's awful to be in this situation. I'm not sure I've ever been involved in a decision as close as this.
Really?
That's what you have to say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the school talent show or whatever.
Well, you did well to make it a draw.
So just, it's nearly a draw.
Oh, if Ellis has brought his voices into it, there was no chance for me.
The winner of this made-up game today is Ellis.
Thank you, David.
What a game, though.
What a game.
So much. I'm very impressed with both of you as well. Great.
Thank you, David. I'm absolutely thrilled with that.
Now then, before we go, we've got a final dip. Well, not into Dave's dissertation, but into Dave's mini discs. Are they mini discs?
They were mini discs. I went into the loft. There were a load. There was other
Dave's
stuff up
bag
there,
of death,
which I've not heard.
Dave thought he was just handing us his seminal work on Rush Radio, but actually, we've unearthed on the mini discs a promo for an indie club night that Dave had made, which we think paved the way for a glittering career indie stations XFM and Absolute Radio. So here's Dave trying to persuade fellow Sheffield students to attend The Plug. Let's hear it, Dave.
Rush Radio is proud to support Club NME at The Plug every Monday night. Showcasing the country's hottest new talent right here in Sheffield, there's only one place to be to start your week.
Start your week!
Club NME has already played host to some massive bands, such as Bromhead's Jacket, Larrikin Love,
children, please beware. I'm choking with the old children.
And Boy Kill Boy. But that's not all. The night continues with guest DJs playing the best in new wave, indie, electro and rock and roll right through the night. All for the advanced bargain price of £2, with drinks offers starting from just £1 a bottle. Club NME at the Plug every Monday night. Only with Rush Radio.
Oh, imagine if that had said £2 for Club NME. You're joking, aren't you? Wow. There we go, folks. What a roller coaster it's been, has it?
That's for me.
Yeah.
Love you lots. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening. By the way, there's a brand new episode of the show arriving this afternoon. So if you've enjoyed the show, then head to Ellis James and John Robbins on BBC Sounds.
Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Very good afternoon to you. It's Matt Jolly with you for the next 2 hours, taking a look at what one person described this week as the politics nonsense. I'll tell you exactly what we are doing after we get the latest news from Richard Foster.
Thanks, Matt. Good afternoon. The lawyers for some of the 37 women who've accused Mohamed Al-Fayed of rape and sexual assault say the Harrods enabled its former owner. The billionaire who died last year has been described as a monster and a predator. One of the lawyers is Dean Armstrong KC.
Our aim, and our single aim, is to seek justice for the survivors of the sexual abuses of Mohamed Al-Fayed, who we say was enabled by an unsafe system of work which Harrods established, maintained, certainly acquiesced to, and we say facilitated during his chairmanship.
Harrods insists the company is very different now, and they've made a settlement process available to women who say they were attacked by Mr. Al-Fayed. Well, Mohamed Al-Fayed also owned Fulham Football Club. It says it started an investigation into whether anyone there was affected by his behaviour. We'll have more on that story in the next hour. There's been more violence between Israel and Lebanon. The Israeli military says more than 100 rockets have been fired into northern Israel. The attacks follow intensive airstrikes in southern Lebanon. Amin Salam is the Lebanese economy minister.
What we were trying to do as a government to quiet things down, calm things down, and try to get to a peaceful platform was really escalated by this last action that was taken by Israel towards Lebanon. So it makes it more difficult that whenever there's an escalation, a negative one, the result is actually always a response that is more aggressive. And that's the cycle we're trying to get out of.
Official figures show government borrowing rose to £13.7 billion last month. Britain's public sector debt now sits at 100% of the country's economic output. 10 new Welsh words have been added to the Oxford English Dictionary. Harriet Horgan from BBC Wales explains the additions, which include how to say cheers, as well as the word for chips.
Iechyda, achafu a sglod, some of the Welsh words that have been added to the Oxford Dictionary, which contains more than 500,000 words and is...